Second hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on this Monday morning to Wick time. This is what I know coming up in about 40 minutes. Tell us what you know. We'll have a $25 gift card to Subway on the line for that. But right now we talk with TD, Teron Davenport. He is the NFL Nation reporter for ESPN and ESPN.com. He covers the Tennessee Titans, and he is now on the line with us. Good morning, Teron. How you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing well. I woke up, so I won. You know that. So I hope you guys are doing well also.
We've heard you say that before, and I like it. So I've got to, you know, I've got to ask you, what was your thoughts on what happened here? I know it happened around the country, but since we live here in Nashville and this happened here, what were your thoughts, and now that you're here?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that because, you know, I'm from the north, the Philadelphia area, and when I got this job, I came down here blind to Nashville. I had no clue what the area was like, you know, having grown up all my life, hearing that the South was different. You know, I have a grandfather who, you know, went through, when he was alive, so many things in Newberry, South Carolina. I knew that, you know, things were a bit crazy, but I came here and I didn't experience any of the things that I thought I would have experienced. So I'm blessed in that nature. But having seen some of the things that happened, not necessarily that happened, but just the way things changed when it went from day to night.
Yeah.
It's a shame, you know, and it's unfortunate that there were people that were there not for the purpose that the peaceful ones were there for. It's unfortunate, but, you know, for those who don't understand, it's been a long time. Whereas the frustration that a lot of us have, it's been almost a lifetime, you know. So there's a lot of feelings and emotions that are put into this. And, you know, unfortunately, the way to express it is different for everyone. Well, fortunately, it's different for everyone. But unfortunately, you know, like I said, there's a mix of people who I don't really think have anything to do with what happened, what people were there for. I think a lot of those people are putting a black eye on the actual purpose of the rally and of the protest.
Yeah. If you don't mind sharing, I'm always curious what others think. Let's just roll reverse. I've never spent any time at all in Philadelphia. In fact, the only time I've been there is just flying through the airport. So I've basically spent no time in Philadelphia. So I've only got just, you know, all the things we hear, right? And, you know, I've been around some of their fans. But I'm not going to blanket the entire fan base because of some of my experiences. So I have, you know, my thoughts of what Philadelphia is like because although I've never been there. So what were some of the things that were shared with you of what you were walking into moving into Nashville from the other perspective, if you don't mind?
I mean, I was just told it's the South, and you know the South is not always welcoming. You know, this is what I was told. But even in talking to my dad, you know, he reminded me of some of the things that his father went through, you know, whether it be being chased home from the store with shotguns or seeing his friends, you know, go through things that none of us could even imagine. So obviously, how can I say it? It has progressed somewhat, but then you have things like you saw what happened in Georgia. You have those things happening, and this is what I was told to be cautious of. But again, one thing that I found with Nashville and why one of the many reasons I've fallen in love with this city is how welcoming it's been, you know, whether it be there at the station or the Titans fans, the Titans organization. You know, this neighborhood that I live in, everything has been very welcoming. So, you know, I am happy to say the things that I was told to be cautious of, have not manifested here, and I don't think they will, but I'm always going to be cautious, you know, because this is something that is ingrained in me to be conscious of my surroundings and understand where I am and what can potentially happen.
Well said. Thank you for sharing that, by the way. What is something right now as we sit here on the first day of June, as you cover the Titans, most of all the dust has settled, although there's still kind of maybe one big piece still sitting out there. But what do you think right now whenever you think of this Titans team going into this season? What's the first thought that you have right now sitting here on the first day of June?
I continue to have the same thought. Run it back. I mean, that's really the thought that continues to dominate my mind when I look at this 2020 season and just seeing the way they ended on such an upward curve is something that, you know, it makes me excited to be able to cover this team this year because I feel strongly that they'll continue that level of success because a lot of the pieces are back in place. Now, obviously, there are some missing, but I think really just running it back, I think that's the thing, and continuing to strive for beyond 9-7, right? That's something that everybody wants to see, and I think they have the potential to have a better season than that this year.
Teron Davenport is with us. He covers the Titans for ESPN. You can hear his podcast, Talking with TD, anytime, but of course you can hear him here on 102.5 The Game as well. Teron, great perspective. And I want to ask you about where we go forward here. I was watching D'Mora Smith on ESPN this morning talking about some of these things, and I know the NFL and almost every organization in every league has come out and said, you know, we want to be a part of the solution in some form or fashion, right? They won't tolerate what's happened. We got to do something about this, all of this. Do you look for players, and maybe how will you kind of give them the access if they would like to express something or, you know, introduce something of what they want to do to help the situation? I'm sure you've thought about that, and, you know, I'm hoping that they're given some space, right, any player with what they want to do without fearing a blowback or of some sort. Right, because we've seen that there can be a blowback, if depending on what you want to do. But what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, and I apologize. It seems every time I'm on this call, the trash company comes and you know does a thing with our dumpsters. I apologize for the background noise just now. As far as that's concerned, I've always prided myself on covering an athlete the way I would want to be covered, right? And for me, I think it's important to unearth the good things that these guys do because, you know, just like everything else, there are bad apples in the bunch, you know, but unfortunately, all of the attention is placed upon the bad apples. Right. And I think when you look at guys like Logan Ryan, guys like Kevin Byard, I mean, heck, we could just say the whole Titans, period. You know, every one of them, almost to a man, is involved in something that is positive in the community. And I think it's important to unearth these things that these guys are doing. So for me, anytime a guy has something positive that they would like to do, I'm pitching it very strongly to my editors. And I'm very passionate about making sure that their excellence outside of the football field is exhibited. So when you see a guy like Ryan Tannehill say what he said, I think that's awesome. When you see Will Compton, who, you know, obviously is not a Titan, but clearly connected to the team, when you see these guys step up and say, although I can't walk in these guys' shoes, I'm here to listen and I understand that enough is enough. I think those are things that you have to write about. But it's just not always something that is green-lighted, I guess I could put it that way. But rest assured that any opportunity I can to share their message, and show what these guys are doing in support of, you know, any community whatsoever is something I feel is my purpose as a balanced, objective reporter.
Chase, go ahead.
Talking to Teron Davenport of ESPN, of course, talking with TD, the podcast. And TD, I will say this based on, you know, the theme of this conversation, that getting to know you and be co-host with you on Chase and TD on Friday nights, you've also become a friend. So it's and I learned so much from you, not only about football, but everything else. I just wanted to say that and let you know how I feel about you as a friend and a colleague. So,
well, I'm glad one of you three said that.
Well, as he was saying that, I was like, kidding, you know, I was thinking the same thing. So I would like to echo, because that's well said.
Yeah, I'm just kidding, man. I consider all three of you guys friends.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And Marquise too. We can't forget Marquise. You know, we have that same share of music that we love.
Yeah, and Marquise, you know, brings it on the tunes coming back from break. But I read your piece on a guy that we talked a lot about, not only on this show but on Friday nights, in AJ Brown. And you always hear that after a guy that has such a great rookie year, there's always that, well, the sophomore slump. You know, will the sophomore slump happen? And my opinions on him are, I don't see it. Now, do I think that, you know, there's tape on him and teams are going to know what to expect and he's got to continue to elevate his game? Absolutely. That's what happens with good players. They figure out how to adapt. But what are your general thoughts that you had in your blog about him of being able to avoid the sophomore slump?
Yeah, I think just the fact that one of the things that stood out for me was at the end of the year, locker room cleanup, when he said, I fell short of my expectations. And I looked at him like, what?
A lot of the stuff you did has
never been done in this organization's history, even back to Houston days, you know. And he said he wanted 1,500 yards, 15 touchdowns. I think that right there, that's something that stuck with me. And it just told me that this kid, he's not satisfied, and he's always going to look to elevate his game to another level. Right, and even just getting to know AJ throughout the year, because, again, this is a guy that was one of my two favorite prospects in that draft class. You know, so I had background with him, had him on Talking with TD before the draft, and then just throughout the year, I really just grew to like him as a man, you know. And that being said, seeing the things he did off the field, very remarkable, right? He was there with his pregnant girlfriend in North Nashville cleaning up, you know, after the tornado. He's a guy who delivered signed jersey to a kid for having a great report card. So for me, when I look at him as an overall person, it tells me that he's always going to strive for that next level. So to put it in football terms, I think there are things that will allow him to be able to overcome the film being out there, being better at the top of his routes, watching other football players. You know, I told him to watch Mike Evans. I told him to watch Keenan Allen as guys. You know, his position coach, Rob Moore, is a very good coach, and they work all the time on separation and doing things like that to, you know, take your game to the next level. So I think that's something that will prevent him from having that sophomore slump. And then in addition to that, his personality, he has that assertiveness to say, give me the darn football. And he's able to do it in a matter where it's demanding, but it's not demeaning, right? So he's not trying to, or not dominating, you know. And he and Ryan Tannehill have established a rapport, and that play-action passing game with the yards after catch that he's able to, I think he's going to be an outstanding second-year player.
Based on your theme that you were talking about earlier of running it back, not to make a pun, but to ask about the running back in Derrick Henry, you know, we had a conversation at the end of last week about, you know, the MVPs and, you know, odds for that. And Derrick is, I think, 50-1. And Darren brought up, you know, do you think that this player is better, the same or worse than they were last season. And I said Derrick Henry, I think, will be better. Right? And I know that that's crazy to say, but I think he will. And whether it's a long-term contract or playing on the franchise tag, I just feel like he's a player that won't really matter. He's out to win, and he's out to be the best at his position that he possibly can be. So do you agree with that me saying Derrick Henry could actually have a better year than he had last year?
Yeah, I believe wholeheartedly that he could have a better year. And the thing is, a better year doesn't mean 1,600 rushing yards. A better year could be more 100-yard rushing games. A better year could be more of an impact from week one through the playoffs, right? So there are different ways that he could have a better year. I think he will, just because of this system that's in place. Now, do I expect him to rush for 1,600 yards? No. But I think a legitimate 1,300 to 1,400 yards is well within his grasp, and have an impact from the season opener to however far they go, I think is definitely something that will happen that will make him a better player than he was last year.
Last thing, Adam Schefter reported that the Browns made Clowney the strongest offer out there, and yet he and his camp declined. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, that's a tough call. I honestly think he wants to come here to Nashville. And I think it speaks to the Titans being the best situation for him, because he has that familiarity. So the lack of OTAs and mini camp and, you know, what could be a condensed training camp, I think makes the Titans the best situation. So I think he wants to come here, and they're just trying to, you know, get that figure correct. I have no clue what that figure is, but long story short, I don't think he wants to be, you know, in any situation, especially signing a one-year deal that won't be more conducive to him having a dynamite season, parlaying that to a bigger contract, long-term security.
Well, it says a lot about this show's thoughts and about you that two of the three, and, you know, while we all feel the same way, I can't connect the same dot because I'm an Indians fan, but two of the three made those statements, and they're Mets and Braves fan. I mean, you know, they're Braves coming from Chase. That's a Braves fan, right? I mean, so to have somebody in your own division say that, that's pretty impressive. It says a lot about you, man. It says a lot about you.
Well, yeah, and I mean, to have a Braves fan as a friend, you know, that says a lot about Chase, you know, because Chipper Jones and all those guys, man, the pitching staff, all of them, I'm scarred, and I'll never, you know, be able to get over the dominance that the Braves had on my Mets. But, you know, it does say a lot for Chase.
Cowboys fan, too. I mean, come on. Like,
yeah, there's, man, I'll tell you what, you guys have
let
got
me
over
Alabama
some serious
and the Yankees
hurdles.
Are your teams too, right?
No.
Hey, thanks for doing this as always. What's on tap for talking with TD this week?
You know what? I don't think I'm going to have any guests. I'm just going to get on there. I think we'll probably do a few ranking, and I just want to talk about just the importance of sports and how it's helped, you know, mesh different people. So I think that's going to be one of the themes that we're going to hit on, and I'm going to share some personal things from my perspective as well.
Thanks for doing this as always. Have a great week. We'll
yes,
be listening.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you guys.
Teron Davenport, Talking with TD is the podcast. You should check it out. That sounds like another good show. I got another good podcast this week. We will come back. This is What I Know at 11:45. And sorry, guys. I got a little bit distracted there. We will come back. More of Darren Donick and Chase next. Caleb Joseph will join us at 1 o'clock. We'll talk a little bit about, in fact, we can probably do some of that right now with the new proposal coming from MLB's PA in a 114-game season. But we can talk about that with him and, of course, the minor leagues, and a lot of those systems are unfortunately going to go away. And we'll get Caleb's thoughts and so much more. That's coming up at 1 o'clock today. So the players have responded, and they have countered with their offer. We knew that was going to happen. We had a great conversation with Richard Justice on Friday, but you knew they weren't going to agree to that. So where is this headed? Because I don't believe for a minute that the owners are going to sign off on a 114-game season and keep the pay scale that was initially thrown out there. I don't believe that's where this is going. So where do you guys think this is going?
Well, I think there appears to be some theory that the owners all along have wanted to play more than 82 or whatever they put out there, that they have wanted closer to 114. I don't know if it's exactly 114, but they thought that was sort of the bargaining card. That's the theory that was thrown out there in the article in The Athletic that I read about it, that Ken Rosenthal and his crew have been doing a really good job. And I was watching Buster Olney on this. So the gist of it, if you have not seen what the players proposed back, they want to play 114 games with some more doubleheaders in there, maybe extend a little bit further, and not take any additional pay cut. And that's where the rubber is going to meet the road, right? So here is the best point of the day that I've heard, and it was Mark Teixeira that was on Get Up in an interview with Buster Olney and Mike Greenberg. He said the players do need to be aware, even though they're making some great points, that you could win the negotiation but still lose. And the owners probably have to look at it this way too. But Teixeira's point was basically this. If you win the negotiation and you get paid more this year, it's likely going to cost you down the road anyway, because if the economics take a downturn, which they're going to, you're just not going to get paid what you've been getting paid, even if this is a success story. That gave me kind of pause to think, and I wonder how that's going to hit a lot of the players here. But it's so essential. I think we all agree. I mean, they can't not play, and they have basically a week to get this done, to start when they want to start, which the players would like to start like June 30th. So
which
they want 3 weeks of
me.
Training. So
I don't know how in the world that's even.
Well, they want a 3 week. They want a 3 week spring training. So spring training, you got to be there in your spring training spot by June 9th, basically, or June 8th, to be able to get your 3 weeks in, and then play June 30th. I think it's pretty safe to say the guys are working out, right? They work out. They're gonna be ready to jump into spring training, I would think, most of the guys. They've been itching to play, just like our kids are itching to play, right? They want to play. They've been working out. They've been getting outside. The weather's been good. So basically, you got about a week to knock this out.
Yeah.
I will tell you this right now. I think the one thing they need to be real careful about is when I see that some owners are like, you know what? I'll be just fine if we don't play this season. I'm okay with that. You're talking about billionaires, and you know what? I believe them.
Yeah, that's
they don't have to pay the salaries.
That's the sad part.
They don't have
that's
to pay the salaries.
They know better than that.
Well,
that's not true.
Well, it doesn't mean that. But they'll be just fine if they don't. I mean, not saying
they're saying they'll lose less money by not playing, and maybe that's true this year. But they'll lose a lot of money over the long haul if they don't play because of the ramifications of not playing. So I don't want to hear that.
Well, don't think that the owners don't have the final card, because they do. In this card game, they've got the final card up their sleeve. They can. They can play that card. And a lot of the players who have made tons of money, they can too. Like, they'll survive. But, you know, they've got way more to lose than the owners. They just do, because they're not billionaires.
And they're the ones that would get blamed for it. I mean,
yeah, of course they would.
And surely they know that. Now, with this proposal, you know, I see a little bit of an olive branch, but not. I mean, this is the thing too that Willie said. You know, who wins the negotiation that Mark Teixeira was talking about? That's the thing that bugs me. Like, why? Like, let's not make this about winning a negotiation.
Exactly.
Let's just get back to playing. You know, let's get a season going. This isn't about, you know, one side or the other winning a negotiation. It shouldn't be during this time. And, you know, I don't feel like it's that way with the NBA or the NHL. I mean, are they all going to agree on everything? No. Is it going to be perfect? No. But we've said that from the very beginning. And I believe you kind of got to realize that. You have to go about it that way. And it doesn't seem like baseball or the players are doing that. That it's just about, you know, getting a win over the other side, and that just shouldn't be the priority during this. And that's what bugs me the most.
Well, what surprises me is you would think the NBA and the NHL, it would be a much tougher negotiation when you've been gone this long, when you completed that much of your season. I think it would be easier for me, I would think, that players to have the mentality is, you know what, the world's screwed up with this pandemic, everything is messed up, we'd just be better off. It stinks. We're not going to crown a champ. It won't be the first time in our sport we didn't crown a champ, and, you know, because we know baseball didn't. And maybe they see that, and they see the lasting effect on baseball. But because we all remember 94. Well, guess what? You didn't finish. And maybe that's in the back of their minds, and they realize that was a really bad, a black eye for the sport. But it would, to me, be easier for them to be like, you know what, let's just focus on getting next season in. Let's just come back then. Baseball, on the other hand, they haven't done anything. They haven't even started. To me, I feel like the urgency, I would think, would be much more on the baseball side of things to get going. They haven't even started. So I guess that's what surprises me most, is a sport that hasn't even started seems like they're the furthest behind of trying to get, you know, resolution.
Well, this has been brewing, and this was a mistake. And in hindsight, I don't know that either side realized what they were facing. I go back to what thoughts were rolling through my head. I'm sitting in the hotel room in Toronto as everybody's shutting down, right? You guys are doing the show. I'm calling you guys, or you guys are calling me every couple hours and giving updates. You guys are trying to figure out, okay, SEC tournament's down and all, on down the line. Baseball, I was watching the Blue Jays. I was watching, I think, the Blue Jays play the last spring training game, as baseball is saying, okay, after this game is over, that's it. We're shutting down, you know, while the NHL has announced their pause. But did we know a few days after that, or a couple weeks after that, I don't know exactly how long, is when baseball and the players said, okay, just pay us for the amount of games that are played. When they did that, I don't know that either side really envisioned what was going to happen in terms of, hey, yeah, you might get a half a season in, but there's not going to be any fans there. I don't know that they really comprehended that at the time. And that's a big part of the problem, right? Because the players are sitting there going, well, you told us we'd get paid, you know, for the games that were played. But I don't know that either side really said, but, you know, there's really a chance that we won't have any fans in the stands. Did we really believe that on March, whatever it was? I don't think we really knew that. So they've got to think outside of the normal labor negotiation, because we got a long history of that. That's why I put Scott Boras on the list on Friday. This is not your normal labor negotiation, right? This is bigger than that. This is the game itself on the line, and this is uncharted waters, right? You got to be thinking differently. It can't be this bulldog, us against you. It's got to be a partnership for the good of the game and to get through it together.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. That's just where they have to get better and just work together. That's the best way to put it. So,
well, we've been saying this for months, though. It doesn't look like baseball's
figured
that out.
It's hard because they hadn't been paid, right? That's the distinction that we should make, Darren. When you're talking about hockey and basketball, at least those players had gotten the vast majority of their season salary by the time this hit. So they didn't have to worry about taking a cut or things like that, at least in the short term for this particular season. Now, their issues are going to be, for those leagues, what happens next year and down the road with the league revenues. So that's where they have to be thinking ahead. So it's a little different than baseball. Like, we got to figure out, what are we getting this year?
But that's my point. That would be easier for the NBA and the NHL. But, we've already made most of our money this year. Oh, you know, we've been off for 3 months. Let's just stay off, and then let's just get things cranked up at normal time, and we'll resume, you know, full season next year.
That's fair.
Right? And then the baseball players, you would think there would be a sense of urgency of, man, we haven't even started. We haven't even gotten paid. Let's get going. And it seems to be just the opposite. Yeah, I don't understand that.
They want to bicker. I mean, it's just, yeah, I agree. I mean, I would, if I – let's say this, because I think there are some players that feel the way that we all do of like, hey, what are we doing? And probably has to do with their contract, you know, and what there's some contracts that players have that they're like, all right, we'll fight this for a while because I can do that. I have the means to do that. And then there are others that are like, hey, let's get going. Let's get on the field. Need that paycheck. So that there's probably a divide there, and that's always going to be the case. I mean, we sit here and we say millionaires versus billionaires, but then you have, you know, bigger millionaires versus lesser millionaires that's going on the side. So I understand that part, but this is just where there has to be solidarity, and they got to get on the same page, and they got to do it fast because it's only going to hurt them.
All right, they haven't asked me, but this is what I think. I think if I'm a mediator, I go in there and I say, all right, listen, guys, first to the players. I know what was said. I know how you interpreted it in March, but let's be honest here. You're just not going to get half of a, you know, it's not going to be prorated exactly. All right? It's just not, we just got to get out of that mindset. And if I go to the owner, and then I would say to the owners, let's take care as best we can, the players who make less money, which is the majority of the players, right? I think there should be provisions for the minor league players, which that's not going to be part of this negotiation. That's a separate thing. But the major league players that make $1 million or less, I don't think it's unreasonable for those players to get close to 100% of their salary, let alone 50%. Come on. That's nothing. The key compromisers have got to be, how do you try the best you can to make it right with the players that are really making the big money, right? That's how I look at it. That's how you take care of the most players, and that's where the top level players can make, they're maybe more capable of making a bigger sacrifice. That's how I look at it. And it's not fair necessarily, but they're in a position to make that sacrifice, and they could walk out of there going, you know what, I made a sacrifice for the good of the game and the good of the most players. That's where I would start it, and how do we get to that number? I think if you have that attitude, you could get there. But both sides have to be willing to do that. Does that make sense, or how would you shoot holes in that?
I mean, I would say at this point, I don't know how that's why I'm struggling with this. I don't know how they're going to come together because we've been talking about this for months, and I don't feel like they have gotten any closer whatsoever. And we had people like Chris Domino, who do things with the Braves and is around baseball. He's been around doing stuff with baseball for years, and baseball experts, Tim Kirchen and Richard Justice and all these guys come on. And everybody say the same thing, like baseball has got to be real careful how they handle this. And so we've been talking about this for months. Like, you can't sit here and bicker over money and salaries. And Blake Snell made those comments, and they had to try to fix that. And that was a bad look. But I don't feel like any of this feels like it's even any better whatsoever. In fact, I don't know if it's worse. I don't feel like they've made any headway whatsoever, and I am completely perplexed at how all this time as we sit here now on the first day of June, so they should already have two months of their season, they would have 2 months of their season completed going into the third month of their regular season, and yet here we are, they haven't done anything. They haven't played anything. They haven't received any paychecks for a regular season. And yet, it doesn't feel like they're any closer than when we first started talking about it, at least in my mind.
Well, I think they're closer because at least each side has put an initial proposal out there. I've seen it before and this frustrated the heck out of me during the hockey lockout where they never did solve it and they sat out the whole year. The Players Association basically said, we're not making a proposal. We're not having a salary cap. And so we're just going to sit there until you come around to that fact. And the owners didn't budge, and the whole season went by. Yeah, they didn't play. I like that the players at least have put their, okay, here's what we're thinking. Okay, so now you have somewhere you can go. I do think they'll get – they'll get closer to playing that many games. I think the owners would like to play that many games. But I think also another element that's important, there's got to be some willingness on the part of the owners to make the players feel comfortable that they're getting a straight answer with, okay, here are the financials. You know, you may not believe me on everything because, as we know, the numbers, you can, you know, I can spin my financials one way and make it look dire and maybe spin them another way and it doesn't look so bad. You know, and that was Scott Boras's main point is, hey, these are billionaires, right? They can take the losses. Why should you take the loss when they're more capable of taking the losses financially than you guys? But there's got to be some ability for the owners to get across to the players, hey, here's where I'm coming from with we're losing our shirts, right? This is going to be a rough year. This is the revenue we're capable of saving here, but with no fans or 20% of the fans or 10%, it's going to be tough this year. You guys got to realize this and work with us for this year. Somebody's got to be that ambassador that can get that across. Otherwise, you have the Max Scherzer saying they won't even open up the books, right? That's an old saying that goes back decades. They won't open up the books, right? They should open up the books to some degree. If you're partners, right, you should be able to communicate that well so you can get out of that mode, or else you're just adversarial the whole time.
Is there any other business in America that opens up their books?
This is not your normal negotiation, right? That's what I keep.
Right, but you say open up your books. So you tell me, is there any? I don't know the answer. I suspect I know the answer. You go into a boardroom and say, "We need you to open up your books." How many businesses in the country do that?
Well, I remember the hockey. They got through it eventually, right? They lost a whole season. Everybody, it was awful, right? They took a huge nosedive, but they came back with a revenue sharing partnership, right? And that's part of the issue with baseball is they are so adverse to doing what every other league does now, and it's have a salary cap based on revenue sharing and let's split the pie up 50-50. That's
right. We've had revenue clauses in our contract, which allows us to get a glimpse of the books, so to speak, as the labor. So that's what we are.
So
that's as far as we've ever got. To go tell a company, open up your books to us. We want to see everything. I mean, I don't think that's practical. I don't believe that would ever happen.
But then how does it work then for the NHL and the NBA and the NFL? They have to have a partnership. There's got to be at least some level of trust that here are the league revenues. You guys get 50%, we get 50%, or 51, 49, whatever it is that they've negotiated. There's got to be some of that there. But there's just such a deep distrust in baseball, I think. Even though they don't have a salary cap, but they've come a lot closer to it over the years with the revenue sharing and the luxury tax and that stuff.
I don't know. I just don't feel like we're any closer today. Hope that changes. I don't feel good on the baseball front.
I don't either.
They better come up with a decision quick. They're talking about more than half of a season. They better start. They better lock the door and come up with a solution. Because I don't know how, unless you're planning on playing until Christmas. A lot of neutral site
games. Well, it's not even just getting a solution. It's like you need to be there in the camps ready to go in about a week, maybe 10 days tops, if you want to have a legit spring training and then get started June 30th or July 1st, whatever.
And have expanded playoffs? Okay.
Yeah.
You're going to finish this up and then start
spring
training?
No, doubleheaders is a big part of the equation there. But, I think that's the thing is you got to get the money settled so that you can then actually have a schedule and then stick to the schedule. Oh, by the way, there's a pandemic going on. You've got to get all the health stuff put in there as well. So there's a lot.
We will come back and finish up the hour with This Is What I Know. Tell us what you know next on Darren Donica Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Yep, we do want to know what you know. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Tell us what you know. It's very simple. It's open-ended. And take it however you like. The best one will get a $25 gift card to Subway. I'll tell you what I know. I thought the video this weekend And I believe the police officer was in Flint, Michigan. I believe that's right. I don't know if you guys saw that video or not, but I was really moved by it. I thought it was pretty powerful stuff. The police officers ended up walking with the group. It was really cool to see, and I hope that's right. I think it's Flint, Michigan. But it was a video that went viral, and I watched it several times. It was really, really good stuff. Amidst of all the some of the bad, some of the good marches that went bad, just like here, basically when the sun went down, that was really cool what happened up there. So that's what I know.
Very cool.
Really? This is what I know. I really appreciate the heck out of Teron's perspective in the last hour, and he made a point that I was thinking about, and I wish I had followed up with him because I wanted to hear him talk about it more. But he singled out Ryan Tannehill and a couple other guys who said who have, I think, an important mindset to have. If you have not been directly affected by this, but you're watching this outrage, is I can't know what it's like to walk in your shoes. I think if you have that mentality and that perspective and you have the willingness to want to listen, like Ryan Tannehill expressed, I think that could go a long way. That's what I know. And so I commend Teron for bringing that up, and I commend Ryan Tannehill for sharing that sentiment. I think that's an important sentiment.
I agree with that too. This is what I know. Fun race yesterday at the Bristol Motor Speedway. Brad Keselowski steals one, and he'd be the first to tell you that because it looked like it was going to be either Chase Elliott or Joey Logano, and they took each other out, or Chase kind of took them both out. So Brad Keselowski gets the win, but NASCAR is expected to announce additions to the schedule this week that as they continue to kind of fill things in as they go. They do have it through June 21st, but it looks like they will have the Pocono Raceway doubleheader that was originally scheduled for June 27th and 28th. They will do that, and then be at Indy July 4th weekend for the Brickyard 400. On to Kentucky July 12th. They will run the All-Star Race, according to The Athletic, on July 15th, a Wednesday at the Charlotte Motor Speedway, and then have another Thursday night race July 23rd at Kansas, before going to New Hampshire on August 2nd, and then another doubleheader August 8th and 9th at the Michigan International Speedway. The question will be, you know, Texas is in there. The governor has said 25% of fans. Do we think there will be some fans in the stands at some of these races?
And that'll be in July? Is that what you said?
Yeah, July 19th. And according to this report that I was reading on The Athletic, that basically no fans before July 5th, but after that could be open. So who knows? Who knows what happens there? But I do think it's interesting that, you know, Texas making that ruling on Friday, and then none of this has been officially announced by NASCAR, but these are pretty good sources, and that's the expectation of the schedule this, you know, coming out later this week. But could be interesting. Could be some fans in the stands.
I would say right now, there was also a UFC event on Saturday night, another fight night card that was shown on ESPN. I would say right now, NASCAR and UFC, when you say what they've been putting on has been a success, has it not?
Absolutely. I mean, at least for NASCAR, the television ratings, and I have not seen what they were yesterday, but I would say the television ratings have reflected that. And when you're getting fans and drivers and those in the industry that are saying they love the compacted schedule, they love having less practice because there's, you know, unpredictability and there are mistakes. You know, Brad Keselowski said it last night, you know, you're going to see more mistakes because we have less time on the track. But I think that kind of adds to it. That adds to the excitement, and it's been kind of fun. And then the midweek races speak for themselves. And so I'm glad to see more of those scheduled in there. I'm a little surprised that the All-Star race is still in play. I kind of thought that they wouldn't have that, but I guess, and again, nothing's official, but I guess that they, they still want to try and do that back at the Charlotte Motor Speedway. It's right in their backyard, so it'd be easy to pull off on a Wednesday night. But
it's a nice gesture for the fans. You need to
sure.
do it. In these times, under these circumstances, you need to do it for the fans. That's what I think. By the way, it's funny. I've said for years and years that NASCAR should shorten seasons too long, and they drag it out too long, and it should be much, much more compact, and people used to laugh. But
well, and you're right, but they've been I think the positive that comes out of this is they have been forced to do some of these things that have been discussed, and they've thought about it, but they've been stuck in the, well, we've always done it this way. But now that they've seen it, it's like, huh. And I guarantee you, when the new schedule comes out for 2021, you're going to see more compact schedules. You're going to see doubleheader weekends and probably some midweek races.
Yep. The old notion, we've always done it this way. Yep. I'm sure dinosaurs thought that way too. Let's go to Michael. Michael, you're up next. Tell us what you know.
Gentlemen, I appreciate you guys as always.
Thank you.
I wanted to go back to kind of expand on what Teron said earlier about the bad apple. So there are bad seeds in any aspect of life, dynamic, race, gender, sexuality, religion. And it sucks to say, but, I mean, those bad seeds, they affect the whole, the image of the whole, like the apple. It saddens me that there's more hate in some people than love in their heart, you know what I mean? So what I know is that, like, it just, what we're at right now as a nation, it really saddens me. I will say this, my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ taught us to love thy neighbor. I know that there was a young girl named Anne Frank. Even after all she endured and went through, she still believed that people were good at heart. And it just sucks that some of the people, some of those bad seeds, they have more hate in their heart than love. And I guess I'll leave it at that. It just kills me, you know.
You're not the only one, Michael. Thank you so much for the call. You're not alone in your thoughts and your feelings. It pains a lot of us. And as I said earlier in the show, there's just some people, unfortunately, will never change, no matter how hard we try. And those are some of the bad apples that we've talked about, and you're not going to change them. And that's the world we live in, but we can always, always strive to make it better, keep working to make it better. It's no different than what we were just talking about in the sports aspect. That's why I said, man, if your mentality is that's the way we've always done it, man, you're a dinosaur. You're going to get left behind. That is just – I can't tell you how much I have scoffed of that notion over the years of, well, that's just how we've done it, or that's how things are. That's the way it's always been. You are a dinosaur. You are always going to get left behind with that mentality. If you think everything stays the same, you are just in dreamland. You're in fantasy land. Nothing stays the same. And hopefully in the case of what we're talking about here, that continues down that path of nothing stays the same. Hopefully things will only keep getting better. Awareness is never a bad thing. Awareness and dialogue and talking about it is never a bad thing. Let's just do it the right way. I mean, let's just not veer off the path. Let's stay on the path with the message. And to me, looting and graffiti and violence, that's veering off the path. The message gets lost, at least in my mind. It does. Let's keep it on the path, and let's keep moving forward. We'll come back. We'll talk to Todd Rodemel with the downtown Omni Hotel as things are opening back up. We'll talk to Todd. It's been a while since we spoke to him. We haven't done a show there in a while at the Omni. We love the Omni downtown, but we'll talk to Todd Rodemel to kick off the third hour of Darren Donick and Chase. That's next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.